At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. You know, I tell you, this is one of those shows that you almost have to wear black when you're hosting. It's a case, Lindsay Clancy, that I've sort of stayed away from. I've been watching it, watching a lot of the testimony, reading what everyone in our true crime community here on Break the Case and on X has had to say. We have a really special guest joining us. I didn't announce it. I was so happy he was going to be able to clear his schedule and come on because I couldn't think of a better person that might have a little bit different viewpoint than me. And I really feel like in these cases that are so, in a sense, polarizing, there are very strong viewpoints on both sides. Some people are torn. One minute they think this way, another minute they think the other way, because at the end of the day, it's just a horrible, hot mess, tragedy of loss and sadness. And but we've got a great guest. We're welcoming back to the stage Mr. Philip Dubé. He was an attorney for decades, both on the prosecution and on the defense side. But I think he's got his defense hat on in this particular episode. But let's see. I'm going to also quickly just talk about what happened. This was on January 24th, 2023. And I want to bring up the victims really quickly. Don't worry, it's not going to be autopsy photos. But we have little Dawson. He was killed first. He was only 3 years old. We have Cora. She was five. She was killed second. And then we have little Callan. He was only 8 months old. And I just want to say that these kiddos were murdered with exercise bands. They were strangled to death by their mother. That's not in contention. What is in contention is the why. So without further ado, let's bring up attorney extraordinaire Philip Dubé. How are you?
I am great. How are you, Ms. Jennifer?
I am doing good. I've felt extra busy lately. I'm in another hotel room. I think I've been home in 30 days, about three. So wow. I'm hoping things will get a little bit back to normal starting next week. How about you? Everything going great?
Oh, everything is wonderful. I cannot tell you. This is the first time in my life where I've been stopped nonstop by people who recognize me on television. I'm stopped at the supermarket, puppy gas, at the post office, at the car wash for autographs. It's strange. At restaurants, they, oh, there he is. Yeah, I even had a waiter stop me. So it's kind of fun. On the other hand, wow. You know, I don't want to have to drop everything while I'm in the middle of my Bichy Soir, you know, to give an autograph. So it's all good, though. Time to worry is when they stop asking, you know. So.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Well, you're famous. I have a famous attorney on the show, everyone.
Real famous.
No, thank you so much for being here. I want to make sure, I'm hoping our Wi-Fi is working as good as it possibly can.
Sure.
Let me just make sure. Yep, I think we're good. I think okay. We're good. I think we're pretty strong. So we're going to discuss Lindsay tonight and this horrible, horrible murder. Murders. I want to talk to you first and just get your initial reflection when you heard about this case. Let's just start with kind of you heard about this. What were you thinking?
Well, first of all, I didn't hear anything about this case until a few days before jury selection. I didn't even know charges were pending. I had never heard of Lindsay Clancy. I had never heard anything about the kids whatsoever. It wasn't until both sides announced ready for trial and that they were almost on the eve of jury selection that suddenly it became national news. And I have been riveted by this fact pattern, by the evidence, the trial, and all the legal pundits out there. And frankly, I've learned so much just from people like yourself, listening to all the conversations and the dialogues back and forth, pros and cons, and whether this is really a referendum on our broken mental health system, or if this is really a true murder trial with something more sinister afoot here, or was she truly the victim of a broken psychiatric and medical system and that of postpartum psychosis? And unfortunately, I think it's one of those conditions that you don't hear much about, if ever, in the news, in school, or among friends, or anywhere else you might read and try to educate yourself. I think the distinction here is certainly most people have heard of postpartum depression, but you have to contrast that with postpartum psychosis because it's a completely different breed of mental disease. And not to trivialize or downplay the severity of postpartum depression because it's very real, but postpartum psychosis is much more of an emergency situation that comes on almost like with no notice, frankly. It's just fulminant. It just emerges out of nowhere. I kind of analogized it. I wasn't kidding. To be on being on a transatlantic flight, peacefully sitting in first class on your way to Paris, when all of a sudden the pilot announces, brace, brace, brace. There's bird strike. A bird comes out of nowhere into the wings and the engine, and now you're in a free fall. What do you do? When everything prior to that seemed normal, all systems were functioning normally. Everything was fine. Nothing was flashing. There was no evidence of a fuel problem, of an altitude problem, but then all of a sudden, bird strike, and now you're on a rapid descent telling everybody to brace, 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 that they're gonna crash. That's what PPP is. Lindsay Clancy crashed with very little notice, with very little onset. And so the question now is, what were the signs? What were the red flags? Were they missed? Could this happen to any treatment provider to have missed the signals? Or did they fail her? And that's why we have trials, frankly. And from where I'm sitting, I got to tell you, Jennifer, that jury at the end of the day is going to be looking at all her psychiatric providers being as useless as the letter P in psychiatrist. Okay? Seriously, it's that silent letter and they're really serving I don't know what purpose. And they're all going to be scratching their heads saying to themselves, these people did nothing for Lindsay. And now look, you have three dead babies. It's shocking. It truly is. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's just a creature of where we are in modern medicine or if it's a creature of where we are in criminal justice or a bit of a hybrid. So now the state of Massachusetts is giving this to a jury to decide. And I'm not sure if this case really belongs in the criminal justice system, despite the tragic, untimely loss of three babies. I mean, look at those angels. Look at them there. Just three innocent souls taken by their own mother. It's just tragic.
It is tragic, but I I've got to stop you on a couple of things, or at least ask some questions of you. The bird strike thing, by the way, was interesting. I kind of like that analogy for something that onsets like this. But, and again, you and I, neither of us are psychiatrists, psychologists, or even have our MDs. But what has been your understanding and what you've looked at in terms of the onset? Is it seconds, minutes? How long does it last? Have you done any looking into that?
It's a process. So typically it'll start up with fatigue. It will then morph into auditory and visual hallucinations. Sometimes you can kind of segue into what's called Cotard's delusion. And there were insinuations of it without articulating as such at the trial. So for example, there was evidence that she started cutting herself. She looked in the mirror and apparently didn't like what she saw, and she started cutting herself. Well, that is a classic sign of psychosis. The question is, though, what is it in the PPP context? Well, that is often a foreshadow or a trigger of an emergency psychotic episode coming, where you can be a life-altering danger to yourself or to others. So the real question is, what is it? Well, you reach a point psychiatrically where you look in a mirror, and it's almost as if you are looking in a carnival funhouse mirror, seeing yourself distorted, putrefying, decomposing, skeletonizing, and you truly see this. And you believe this is happening, so you take any edged or sharp instrument and you start cutting yourself so that you can modify yourself back to an otherwise normal looking human being. Bring yourself and restore yourself to baseline. When you're at that stage and you are cutting yourself to the point that you are bleeding, you need to be in an inpatient setting immediately, in a hospital setting. None of this, give her a little Zoloft, you know, give her a little Elavil, give her some Seroquel. No, you need to go into the hospital and have a village of practitioners watching over you until you are stable. Otherwise, you could end up killing yourself, not to mention others. So those were some of the symptoms, at least as presented in the trial court to me, that said that everybody missed these red flags. And I think part of the problem here, Jennifer, is number one, it's such a rare disease, not postpartum depression. Let's be clear. That is a common occurrence among women who have a hormonal drop. They have psychiatric major depressive disorder from the delivery of the baby, et cetera. And it's, again, it's not to minimize that, but this is a different echelon, a different breed, almost a completely different diagnosis within the DSM that requires some specialized skill, training, and ability to detect it. And one of the doctors who testified, I think it was yesterday and today, I think she's in her late 30s. Okay. Now, I'm not here to be an ageist or disparage anybody in their 30s, but the issue is, what kind of experience could somebody in their late 30s have, not so much in psychiatry, but within that rare sort of pie slice of PPP, postpartum psychosis? And remember, this crime occurred, when was it? January of 23. Okay. So we're talking 3.5 years ago now. Her psychiatrist testified that she's only been licensed for 4 years. Well, you know what? On the day of the crime, she had been out for 6 months. And one of her first patients, all excited, done with residency, got all her licensing ready to go. One of her first patients is Lindsay Clancy with a rare form of postpartum psychosis, and obviously did not know the red flags, okay? So instead, they're just trained to diagnose based on how the patient physically presents, based on how they answer questions, maybe what kind of medication they're on. And based on that, they create a clinical picture and a diagnosis. Remember, there is no one specific drug for this ailment, and there is certainly no one specific diagnostic test. So, for example, you can't just do a blood test, take an MRI, a stool sample, or send a culture to the lab and say, aha, we have PPP. So now we need to get her on this new experimental drug to see if we can restore her to baseline. No, it doesn't work that way. Instead, you have to do what's called the empirical treatment approach and find that cocktail, that trial and error, that mix of drugs that work for her. And it sounds like that they hadn't found that right admixture yet. And what happened? She cycled down the drain. Literally, cycled down the drain and crashed, just like that plane over the Atlantic that had bird strike. And nobody was trained to detect it and to prevent it ahead of time. Now, it's not to say that these doctors were engaging in malpractice, that they were out of their league. I truly believe that as presented, they didn't have enough clinical evidence at the time to definitively diagnose her. That is the problem. That's how insidious this condition is, in my opinion.
First of all, I want to say I appreciate that rundown, and I think it is so important for the listeners to kind of hear that concisely stated based on the testimony and the evidence that we've seen so far from the medical personnel from that side of it. I'm going to have to argue a lot, though, on the opposite side.
Sure.
Because the issue that I see here, and again, in looking at the law, and I want to make sure you and I are both on the same page, is that Massachusetts law, they're looking at her not being responsible because of a mental defect or disease, and that basically she didn't know what she was doing at the time was wrong and had no control of what she was doing. That, in a nutshell, is my understanding that the long jury instruction, I'm just narrowing it down, that's what the jury is going to have to decide. So I want to make sure first that you and I are on the same page legally with this.
Yeah, first off, she can't or could not appreciate the wrongfulness of her criminal act, okay? Or that she could not stop herself because of the mental disease. Okay, not because she had the capacity or that she chose not to, but she could not because of the disease itself. And that's where the experts, what I call the thought leaders, are going to have to come in this sort of rare psychiatric field to educate this jury. And hopefully you've got a jury who's not going to just discount the defense expert opinions and just apply common sense. Well, how could she not know what she's doing? How can you take a rubber Pilates exercise band, choke the life out of three children and not know it or not plan it, not intend it? We don't want people to be dismissive of science, instead only apply common sense. They took an oath to follow the law and to listen to all the experts and the witnesses. If they're not going to do that, they should be excused. Now, obviously, they've been able to ferret those jurors out and figure out who can be fair and impartial and certainly follow the court's instructions. So I have no doubt that they're all capable of doing it. I really don't. I just hope and pray that for both sides' sake, that they have the right experts coming in to educate the jury on this subject. And oftentimes what we see in criminal forensics is somebody who holds themselves out as a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or what we call a PsyD, with all the proper credentials, but they're not a jack of all trades. In other words, you don't wear every single psychiatric or psychological hat merely because you have that title. It's sort of like an attorney who, yes, we are juris doctors, we are licensed by our state bar. However, we might have dedicated the lion's share of our career maybe to criminal law, contracts, landlord, tenant, family law, whatever it may be. But just because we hold that title of attorney at law doesn't mean that we are, conversant in every aspect of the law and in every field of the law, in every area of the law, because we're not. Psychiatry, psychology, and forensics work the same way. So I am hopeful that whoever both sides got has a specialized practice in the area of postpartum psychosis, and it can explain the statistics, the phenomenon, the symptoms, the cause, and the treatment to the jury.
Well, I agree with you fully that a lot of this is going to come down to the experts. This is just one of those trials that's imperative, but both sides of it. But I got to tell you, when I look at the facts, strictly the facts here, for instance, 4 days prior, there were queries into how to kill. Now, I will tell you that was from the probable cause affidavit. And I think a deeper dive showed more how to kill, but it was about self-harm more. But it does talk about the carotid artery, which obviously is important if you're going to strangle somebody. And I don't think that we can just throw out the window the fact that this is a healthcare professional. This is a nurse that's gone through extensive training and certainly had extensive knowledge in terms of a lot of things we're going to talk about, in terms of strangulation and also in terms of how to cut and not commit suicide. In other words, the directionality that she cut her wrist to commit suicide, that makes no sense to me for somebody in that profession. She also, in my opinion, set up to be alone with these children. Not only did she set that up, she researched how long the time would take to go from one location to another. In other words, this restaurant that was actually further away than their usual restaurants. And beyond that, then how long it would take to go to the CVS. And so she had it mapped out. She knew the amount of time she would have with these children. And I think that is problematic in terms of arguing that she was in some state of psychosis, disarray, couldn't think, had lost it because it was so controlled. So I can't equate this to a bird strike. What I equate this to is more of a mechanical issue that had been ongoing for a period of time, and that unfortunately the airline mechanics decided to band-aid and didn't put in any new parts and tried to just take shortcuts to fix. And then it crashed and resulted in a horrible tragedy because it wasn't taken care of properly. So in a sense, I agree with you that the healthcare professionals in this failed. I'm going to further say, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this, that Daddy-O hold some responsibility.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Oh, let me tell you.
Go ahead. Jump in on Patrick. I want to hear your thoughts here.
I went on television, and I was asked about him. And make no mistake about it, I genuinely feel sorry for this man. He's lost his three children, and by all accounts, he was a loving, doting father. There was no question that he adored his children, and there was no question that he adored his wife. And literally, within the blink of an eye, his entire family is obliterated. The children are gone. She's paralyzed from the waist down, locked up, probably will never be released again. I think the best that Lindsay can hope for is being confined to a locked state hospital setting for a number of years. And I think it'll be a while before she is ever granted what we call community-based treatment, where she's not locked up, but she's still under state jurisdiction. Having said that, I cannot believe that he took the stand without any promises of immunity and said that he knew that she had thoughts of harming the kids. If you had that foreknowledge that your wife was going to hurt your babies, your children, why on earth would you ever leave her alone with them? I mean, when you really think about it, if he saw those types of disturbing and heard those types of disturbing, intrusive, harmful thoughts, you would think that he would stay on the buddy system with her and not let her and those kids out of his sight. And the fact that he left knowing good and well that she had voiced those thoughts, I think at a minimum makes him complicit in child endangerment, not the homicide. I wouldn't go that far, because I don't think he ever intended that. He didn't aid and abet it, not by any stretch. But I think there is a form of child endangerment here, especially when you know that your wife, the custodial parent of these children, has voiced thoughts of hurting them, if not ending their lives. That is a crime. And the fact that he took the stand without any immunity, I'm shocked that nobody appointed him counsel. You would think the judge on his own motion would say, counsel approach. And it's sidebar. I can see the reporter there doing this, saying, this man's about to incriminate himself. I think we need to get the public defender down here to stand in and represent him and let him know what his Fifth and 14th Amendment rights are to remain silent under the United States Constitution. Otherwise, he is in criminal jeopardy here. And the prosecutor might come back and say, well, Your Honor, we have no intentions of prosecuting him. And the judge might say, yet. But what if he says something that you don't want him to say? Or what if she's acquitted? Then what? Well, then I guess in theory, I could go back to my supervisors and we could discuss whether or not he should be prosecuted. And this is all going on at sidebar with the reporter present. They should have appointed him counsel. Now, does it mean they're going to go after him? I don't know. But the fact that they can means he needs counsel. So unless he was so self-assured or had some off-the-record assurances that nothing was going to happen to him, he should have had an attorney present during his testimony. That's my opinion. And I've done it many times in my career, where we don't just represent defendants charged with crimes. We get a call from the court saying we need an attorney down here to be represented by the public defender right away. We're in a jury trial and the witness is about to incriminate themselves. So that's what we're there for. We stand ready to go down into court and represent anybody who could be in criminal jeopardy. That's what should have happened to him. And the attorney can advise him, tell him what could happen, and then it's up to him if he wants to take the stand or take the fifth or ask for a grant of immunity.
Well, okay, Philip, I just have to say, and this is why I love to have a lawyer's mind on here, which is opposite of my mind, because I'm looking at this going the whole time he's testifying, kind of like what you're saying here, but I'm thinking to myself, this guy is culpable for child endangerment. I mean, I think you recognize that too. Your big point is he needed counsel. My big point is he failed his kids. He failed them. And that's just what he was willing to say on the stand. I think there is so much more when you peel the onion back I watched how guarded he was when he talked about that and how his father, how guarded the father was. In other words, with issues that they may have seen with her and so on and so forth, how she was treating those kids, very guarded. And so just for him to admit that she told him she wanted to harm them, that's a big problem when you see what she ended up doing to them. Yes. And I find it very interesting that other cases, whether we're talking about children who go into schools and commit crimes, when their parents know, we saw the big case, obviously, where the parents were charged and they each got 10 years in the school shooting. I just can't fathom that he holds no responsibility here.
But think about this, though. What if they didn't have him as a witness? Don't you think the case would have been harder to prove? In theory, I mean, seriously, think about this. What if he refused to testify? I believe in Massachusetts, I don't know if they have it. They may have what's called a testimonial privilege, where you cannot force a spouse to testify yeah. against the other spouse. But I think there may be an exception if it involves domestic violence or child abuse to common children. But my point is, let's say they didn't have him. Then all you really have is Lindsay's body out on the front lawn after defenestrating herself, you know, right? Leaping mm-hmm. tall buildings in a single bound like Superman, but not to rescue anybody. Instead, it was to unalive herself. And you have three dead babies in the house, okay? How do you really prove what happened? Well, unless she gives a statement, or you have Patrick, the husband, or a significant other coming in to testify, I think it would have been a much harder case to prove in terms of guilt, not sanity or lack of criminal responsibility, but whether or not they even have the right person. Because if you think about it, they could have maybe gone after Patrick. It's very possible they thought maybe the spouse had something to do with this if he's not there. Who else would try to kill the wife and the three kids? The husband's not there. He could have been their prime suspect, you know? But my point is, though, that they actually needed him, and he gave a chronological history of what went on in the home. So he was probably the best witness so far for the prosecution and also for the defense, frankly, because he's been able to tell the jury how the health and wellness system failed Lindsay. Everything that they went through to get her help, to sort of tend to all her cries for help, to try to get her on the right medication, to try to restore her back to baseline. And all that really happened was her symptoms progressed, got worse. Nobody really zeroed in on the fact that she had a condition that they probably had never even heard of. And they dropped the ball, frankly, on her. They did.
Now, but listen, this wasn't her first go-round with mental issues. If I recall correctly, in the civil case that I believe she has lodged against the doctors, right? Isn't it a fact that she had problems with being bipolar and all these other issues? I just really think a lot of people, look, anybody who can do this to their children, anyone, yeah, they've got a screw loose.
Yes.
All of these people. But that doesn't mean that they did not know right from wrong. I'm going to give you a counter argument with a male. And it's so interesting to me that when there's a male, in other words, the father involved, it's, you know, everybody wants to hang him from a tree right away. Travis Decker. If you recall, Travis Decker was in the Army. He had been released. He was having all sorts of PTSD and a whole laundry list of issues. And he had lost a lot of custody. He still had visitation with his three kids. And he took them out in the woods on visitation. And he put a plastic bag around their heads and he suffocated all three of them to death, little ones. And then what did he do? He killed himself within a mile. Listen, a lot of people say, oh, he succumbed to the winter. It just took them so long to find him, but he killed himself, just like many other cases we have where the family annihilators, it's too much. They don't like their life. They have control issues, so they don't want anybody else managing their children. To me, her jumping out the window is two things. And I understand that the defense and the prosecution have characterized the details of that quite differently, and that the prosecution has kind of crawfished a little bit on that. Mm-hmm. But essentially, to me, it's consciousness of guilt. I don't want to be around to face justice. I'm done. I did this crime. I don't want anybody else raising my kids. I'm out of here. And that's a consciousness of knowing right from wrong.
Well, if that's the case, then there were so many other ways for her to effectively end her own life. What guarantee did she have that just jumping out a second story window would in fact get the job done? Seriously, if you really, and by the way, it was very intelligent of the prosecution to bring the jury to the house for the jury viewing. I am telling you that Jennifer Sprague, one of the assistant DAs on the case, probably wanted that jury to see that it really wasn't that high up. You know, it's one thing to have photos of the house, have cops explain that her body was found at the ground level outside, out of beneath a second story window, because it sounds like that this was at high elevation. But the truth be told, when you look at the photos of the house, it's really not that far down. So anybody could, in theory, survive it. There's no guarantee you're going to die. Unless you're doing a head first type thing and you know you're going to land on concrete, then there's a strong probability it'll kill you, but it's not guaranteed. That's the problem. So, on the one hand, I kind of agree with you. I think you're right. It could just be almost like a personality disorder where it wasn't really a form of histrionic personality, but maybe more along the narcissistic personality disorder where her ego was not stroked enough. And instead, she just wanted to have the last hurrah, take herself and the kids out. That could very well be the case. However, when you look at her psych history, the psych history itself does not buttress that point of view. Why would somebody repeatedly go in for mental health care, express their ideations, express their sleep deprivation, and express all their problems? All along, it's a plot to kill themselves and their children. Instead, they would just let the symptoms progress to the point where they're just completely psychotic, unalive themselves and the children. So that's why I think that this is one of the rare cases where she truly had postpartum psychosis. And when you look at some of the criteria in trying to reach that diagnosis, one of the risk factors that elevates that probability to that diagnosis is a mental health history. And they specifically name bipolar disorder as sort of a co-occurring disorder along with the postpartum depression and psychosis, that makes it more probable than not that that's where you're headed. So if she didn't have that documented psychiatric history, I'd be inclined to go along with you, Jennifer. I'm more of a moderate true crime attorney rather than that commie, pinko, bleeding heart, liberal, softy public defender type. Unless I'm in court representing a client, that's different. But objectively, just as a legal analyst, I believe that her psych history, as heavily documented as it was, makes her diagnosis now much more credible. I do. And I'm so anxious to hear what her experts have to say.
Yeah, listen, I want to listen to the experts too, but I just got to tell you, I've never seen somebody who has some sort of break and they are this controlled. bye, honey. Can you go pick up some food? And oh, by the way, stop by CVS for some laxatives for the kids. And oh, here's the route. I mean, that she knows. I know this is the route. I know how long they're going to be gone. 4 days in advance. Let's see. I'm looking up different ways to kill. I will agree, though, from what I could see, it was a little bit misrepresented, I thought, in the probable cause affidavit. Yes, she was looking up ways to kill, but it was more self-harm than at least what I saw represented being like killing another, other than the carotid, which is interesting, right? Because to strangle and be effective, it goes on the carotid. This is the other thing. It wasn't one child. It was all three. And to think of how that happens, it takes seconds, several seconds before the child would be actually unconscious. So they're looking at mommy, wrapping this band around them. And then after they're unconscious, it takes minutes to actually cause death. And we actually saw with Callan, he didn't even die. That's how difficult it is to strangle somebody to death. When you listen to different individuals who committed murder in this way or tried to, it's very difficult, even with a ligature, and she had a ligature. So the time, the energy, and I know the prosecution wasn't allowed, or they stipulated, you know, not to get into a lot of this, which I think was a true disservice. Because I think it shows the amount of time that all of this happened for her to be in this, you know, bird in the engine. It's very difficult for me to buy that you can do something this pre-planned.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When you're going through a psychotic episode, it's not something that's fleeting, like a plane whizzing by, or going down quickly in an elevator, or catching a ride real quick. You hop in the car and it drives off and it's over. When you're going through a psychotic break, it can be time consuming. You've got your adrenaline flowing, your hormones are dropping. You've got dopamine levels that are soaring, and Lord only knows what kind of other chemical reactions are going on, not to mention your own independent mental health struggles. It can take a very long time for the psychosis to subside and to return to baseline. And it makes it even worse in this particular case if you're paralyzed from the waist down. Because remember, when she hit bottom there, she couldn't move anymore. She couldn't do anything. She was basically motionless and lifeless. And she was, frankly, she was lucky to have survived. I think they're going to put an expert on the stand to say that she went out head first and that it's only a small miracle that she survived. The prosecution's probably going to put somebody on. No, she didn't go head first. She went out in a certain way where she could hold onto the windowsill to brace herself and then drop herself down. And it probably was a little too far. And then she fell, lost her balance. And then, of course, the rest is history with her paralysis. But I do believe that a psychotic event doesn't have to be instantaneous. It can be ongoing. So I don't know. It's one of those rare diseases where at least for purposes of the trial, we'll learn more from the experts when they testify about how long the symptoms endure, what the aura is, how long that is leading up to it, and how it resolves afterward. I'm very fascinated by it. I am.
It is. It is interesting. Look, as I always say, no one can commit a crime like this without, in my opinion, without having some sort of mental issue going on, because it is just, to kill your own children is just so counterintuitive, counter everything with nature, with just, you know, for the mothers out there. I mean, your mother, your mama bear is born the second you have a child. I always tease that I've only been published once, and this is true. And it was a poem I wrote after I had my first son. And the poem is basically about, I never knew love until, because you never, as a mother, I don't think you understand love until you have a child. That was just how I felt. It takes over your whole being. And so to kill your own child is so counterintuitive to that, and to even want to harm them. And when I said face to face, by the way, I mean going and get them, right? Because she did one at a time, looking at their faces, however she did it, whether she turned them around, whether she kept them face to face, likely from behind ultimately. But nevertheless, you have to go get them. And they're like, mommy, what's going on? And there you are, evilly with your band, maybe spinning them around and beginning the strangulation process. It's just gut-wrenching. And I just don't know, Philip. I have no evidence before me that shows me she did not understand what she was doing was wrong. It's not that I don't agree with you that she could be in some sort of psychotic state where she wasn't herself and she was acting nothing like she normally would be, but she knew right from wrong because she sent him out. She planned the amount of time he would be gone, and then she threw herself out the window one way or the other, whether it's she lowered or she jumped. Either way, to me, that's consciousness of guilt. I'm not going to jail for this. Goodbye.
Well, what if in her mind, just remember now, she's psychotic, assuming the experts testify to that, that she thinks she's running from gargoyles and fire-breathing dragons. And what if she believes that the children are in fact Satan incarnate? That this is what's going through her mind. These are her own wild imaginings from the psychosis. Then if that is truly a play and she cannot appreciate what is happening because of these visual and auditory hallucinations arising out of the psychosis, then she was unstoppable. In her mind, she was doing the right thing. Doesn't mean it's legal. It just means that she lacks criminal responsibility. You have to understand that in order to convict somebody of any crime, you have to have the criminal mind, not a diseased mind, but the criminal mind. If all you have is just somebody who believes that they're being chased by monsters and gargoyles and, I don't know, unicorns, and that they are catatonic and howling at the moon, it means they're out of touch with reality. How can we convict anybody with that type of diseased mind? Because remember, what the heart of crimes is, having that devious mind to go through with such awful criminal acts. But if you don't have the criminal mind accompanying it, you don't have that sort of convergence or confluence, if you will, of act and intent, you cannot convict. Now, in the state of Massachusetts, what they do is they say, yeah, you can have or commit the criminal act. You won't have criminal responsibility, though, if the criminal mind prevented you from understanding right from wrong, or you were unstoppable because of it. So we're going to find out from these experts if she was in fact stoppable. In other words, did she have the capacity to just stop in her tracks and just refuse to and went forward with the murders and jumped out the window? Or did she truly not even know what she was doing? That's why we have juries, unfortunately. I'm just an attorney. I don't get to decide the case. I only get to try it.
This is my problem, though. I can't find facts to support gargoyles. In fact, what I see are her journal entries that are controlled. They are very coherent. There are no mention of demons. There's only mention of her being ticked off at her kids and seemingly struggling with motherhood. I only see as an example what she did that day. She took Cora to the doctor. She took photos. She arranged for them to get food. There was nothing that showed she was going through this horrific time. In fact, her husband testified that she seemed better than normal that day. So I see this as, I think she had issues. She wanted help. I agree with that. We see that. She wouldn't have gone to doctor after doctor and taken all that time. But you listen to a lot of the testimony, and that is not what it is at all described. The nanny's like, she was a loving mom. So I know what you're saying, but I don't see the facts to line up with somebody that freaked out and saw monsters or had Satan tell her to take these babies' lives. I don't see it.
Well, just remember, looking functional is not the same as being well. And we cannot confuse appearing well with a diagnosis. You just can't do it. So the root, and I think what's so alien and foreign to all of us is our unfamiliarity with postpartum psychosis. It's such a rare bird in forensics and in criminal law. I mean, think about it. All the cases we've talked about, we've worked on in our career, have you ever had to work on a case involving postpartum psychosis? Never. This is the first, okay? And that's how rare it is. So the question now is, who are the thought leaders in this area of psychiatry who can really educate, not let alone the public, but the jury on what the symptoms are, what the treatment modalities are, and what the prognosis is after diagnosis? What do we really do with all that information? Well, it's complicated. And the reason why it's complicated is because there is no cure for it. There is no single medicinal treatment for it. And instead, you have to go through that sort of empirical medication approach to try to find the right balance of meds, or sometimes they call it polypharmacy, to treat her or anybody for that matter. And unfortunately, I think that she, the kids, and Patrick were sort of the victim, if you will, of our being behind the eight ball of postpartum psychosis. We're just not there scientifically and medically to quickly diagnose and get it treated. And unfortunately, these children fell prey to this hideous disease, assuming the jury finds that's what it was. Now, if they find, no, she did have criminal responsibility, then she's going down for life. I mean, she's going to the Massachusetts Department of Corrections in a wheelchair. And the taxpayers of Massachusetts will bear the fiscal burden of having to care for her for the rest of her life.
You know, at the end of the day, there is absolute obvious evidence that she was failed. I don't think anyone watching this trial, anyone that understands her seeking help and not receiving it. The cadre of what, 13 different drugs, even though she wasn't taking all of them, still they were assigned. I totally understand that the system failed. Mm-hmm. I also really believe the husband and family failed. Because anybody acting like she was acting from the testimony we see and was struggling with all of this, they failed. The husband specifically, in my opinion. Patrick has some explaining to do because, like you said, he probably needed a lawyer up there.
Oh.
Because he seems
or a grant of immunity.
Yeah, the child endangerment charge. Yes. I think that could definitely be proved. I'm not talking about murder or second degree manslaughter, nothing like that. But just endangering those children by allowing their mother to be around him, knowing her mindset, knowing these issues. So having said all of that, I still can't get away from the facts of the sending him away, Googling the route, understanding the time frames between the restaurant and the CVS, knowing how long he'd be gone, previously Googling about the carotid, actually Googling about also taking her own life. It's just so well planned. And maybe you're right. Not enough people understand this. But again, we're talking about, and I actually wish I had the number, the rareness mm-hmm. of this, which also lends itself that she wouldn't have had it, right? I mean, you're talking, is she just going to be one of the, you know, whatever the number is, thousand, mm-hmm. you know, a very rare situation, and we have it here. The throwing herself out the window, I don't care whether she lowered herself. I just think that shows me consciousness of guilt. And I see your side of it, or at least you're looking at the side of it, is no, that shows, you know, that shows she actually lost it. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean this flippantly when I say freaked out. I'm just struggling for a word that would encompass a woman losing her mind enough to be able to strangle her 3 children. I mean, that's, you know, the ultimate losing it, freaking out, not being in control, if that's what happened.
Well, I think the real question for the jury is also going to be, even if, and I'm sure they will buy the fact that she was mentally ill. I think they will. They're going to ask themselves, if she had the capacity to stop herself. That's the real question. And frankly, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's a hung jury. I think this really could go either way, where you have some jurors who think, no, health and wellness failed her. We can't lock her up, and her doctors didn't know what on earth they were doing. But then you might have mothers on that jury who, like yourself, who say, no, she knew good and well. She plotted this. We just, you know, don't like the way she handled it. And it seems a little primitive in how she handled it, but she knew the difference between right and wrong. And she could appreciate the wrongfulness of her acts. How do we know that? Because she Googled it. When you start using words like, you know, unaliving, killing, and having intrusive thoughts about harming, it means that you're contemplating it. So if that's the case, then why didn't you do more? Why didn't you, for example, in the state of Massachusetts, you can walk into a hospital and ask that you be put on an involuntary hold. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You can do it in Florida. They call it the Baker Act. Yep. You can do it out here in California. We call it a 5150 hold. It just means that you're so whacked out, so psychotic, that you're a danger to yourself or others. So what do? They put you on a 72-hour site hold in a locked hospital until a doctor clears you. She could have done that, especially given the fact that she's an RN. She knows good and well what a psych hold is. You're not there permanently, just until a doctor clears you. And by the way, if at the end of the 72 hours, the team feels that you're still not well, they can extend it, I believe, for up to 2 weeks. And after that, you need a court order, because at some point it becomes confinement and you're entitled to due process, okay? But the bottom line is, did she not have the capacity just to go to an emergency room and say, put a hold on me? I need to be seen in an inpatient setting immediately.
Well, in Massachusetts, I believe it's a rule 12 or a rule 10. 10 is when you voluntarily do it. 12 is when a doctor says you need to be committed, which is just like what I'm more familiar with, which is the Florida Baker Act. And mm-hmm. what you know about in California is the 5150. But my point is, I think she did do that. I think that did happen. If I remember from the testimony, I remember listening to a doctor talking about it was a 12, though, as I recall, not a 10. In other words, not voluntary, but somebody else did it. But then she, you know, was released, as you talk about. You can't keep them there forever, or else it's not.
Or, to be fair to Lindsay, what if she ended up at a hospital where she is involuntarily committed, and you have a first-year doctor right out of residency who has never seen PPP before? They don't even know how to diagnose it. They hear, oh, she just had a baby. They're thinking postpartum depression. Let's just give her a little Seroquel, let's give her a little Zoloft, and send her on her way. They don't know how to do a complete psych history and evaluation to be able to reach that diagnosis. So then it begs the question, what else could she have done, for Lord's sake? She did everything she could before her body crashed. Just like the bird strike in the aircraft, where now you have to brace for the free fall. What does everybody do? And in that case, the aircraft takes everybody down with it. And that's what she did. She took everybody down in her immediate surroundings with her, because she crashed. And it's up for a jury to decide if they feel it was unstoppable by her. It's a tough question. It is.
But how about all these other family annihilators that family annihilate? Females, males, there's been so many cases. The one that really sticks out, I wanted to touch on, that I already talked about, is Travis Decker. Nobody felt sorry for him. And that guy sought all sorts of help. You know, he was a veteran. He went in so many times. There were all sorts of issues that were well known. The mother did a pretty good job getting him away from the children. But of course, then ultimately, he was allowed visitation and killed him.
Well, Travis's situation is different. What do you think would have happened if Travis survived? So the kids are now dead. They've been suffocated. But he survived after an unsuccessful suicide attempt. What state was that in, by the way? Do you remember?
I believe that was in Idaho.
Idaho. You know good and well, Idaho would have prosecuted him. Okay? Come on.
Of course.
Okay?
Of course.
Okay. So then the question becomes, what would a jury have done with it? I don't believe Idaho, correct me if I'm wrong, has the insanity defense. I don't think they do.
They don't. You can only use it for mitigation and sentencing.
Correct. So it would have to be a straight up mental health defense that he didn't intend to kill. That's an element of murder. And that the intent was somehow vitiated by the mental illness. You cannot use drugs or intoxication, voluntary intoxication anyway, as the basis for negating intent to kill. You cannot. You can't just go out and get loaded, kill, and cry that you were drunk, so therefore you should be acquitted. No. It has to be an involuntary act, like mental illness, because it's something beyond your control. You don't have the criminal mind. It goes back to that. So you have to have the coalescence, if you will, of criminal mind with criminal act. And if he didn't have that at the time, then a jury could find him not guilty. But of course, we'll never know, because he ended his own life.
And I want to, by the way, it was Washington State.
Washington, okay.
I remember now, okay. It was Washington State. But nevertheless, my belief is they would have strung him up. There would not have been any, oh my gosh, but he had postpartum. He had PTSD. He had this. He was at war. You know, he was all these things. There would be not one iota.
No way.
In my opinion, of poor Travis Decker, he had mental health issues. And there's so many other cases. That's just one that struck me because, again, three children, similar style of killing. One took their life successfully, one didn't. They both begged for help. So...
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Well, I'll tell you, the whole postpartum phenomenon is really gaining momentum in true crime. We're also seeing it in the celebrity world. I don't you remember Marie Osmond?
Oh, of course.
Right, the sister of the Osmond brother family. She suffered with postpartum depression, and
yes.
I believe it lingered for quite a while. I mean, fortunately, she didn't harm her children. I think she was more of a detriment to herself, and it took her quite a while to work her way out of that. She eventually did. And I would be interested to hear her thoughts on this case, if in fact she even pays attention to true crime. I don't know, but I would think that she would be a fantastic juror on the case because she truly understands the mental health component and dynamic behind the defense. So it would really be interesting. So you need an educated, health savvy jury, really, to understand, embrace, and listen to the scientific evidence. If you don't, and instead just apply common sense, then she's going down. And again, she's going to be a fiscal burden on Massachusetts. They're going to have to take care of her for the rest of her life.
So I'm kind of with you that I think it's possible this could be hung.
Mm-hmm.
If there are people, you know, and I think all of us out here, and I don't know if you have any personal experience. I have a very dear friend as well. She had a baby pretty young. She was 21-ish, 22. I think it was our senior year. We're both the same age in college. And that baby, she had postpartum. She could not stand being around the baby. And the baby he had a very serious issue. He had a colostomy bag. He had a serious issue with a colon, like lack of a colon that didn't function. I mean, later he ended up getting surgery and ended up being fine. But you can imagine the pain of that child was in. And my girlfriend and I would constantly not just us, but her family, we all knew she could not be around the baby.
Oh.
You know, because she was not herself, and it just took her a while. But that's the other thing. Cullen was 8 months old. This isn't, how is postpartum, when I think of postpartum with my friend, and then my niece, Rebecca also had it, and it was very interesting. I remember my husband actually saying before our first child, I don't know whether he was reading about it or whatever, but he said, I need to have a talk with you. And he never says anything, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, if you ever feel after you have the baby that you want to hurt the baby, just let me know and I'll take it away until you get it together.
Yeah.
Even he, now he's really smart and everything, but a quiet, non-true crimer, worry about anything. He came to me and said that. And I said, well, I'll absolutely let you know if I want to kill the babe, you know?
Of course.
But to me, there were so many family members that let down this situation.
Did not ever contemplate this end result. I don't think they ever thought it would ever come to this. Right? Yeah. Who would? Who would ever predict or contemplate or foresee this type of triple homicide arising out of what people perceive as the baby blues, a little melancholy, a little sleep deprivation? I mean, you talk to most mothers of newborns, they're all exhausted. Baby kept them up, colicky, crying, keeping crazy hours, having them up before the crack of dawn. Everybody's tired. The father and the mother take turns getting up in the night to change the diaper, to feed the baby, to do whatever. Everybody's exhausted, okay? That is just part and parcel of newborn parenting. So, but the question is, when does it resolve and should it progress into psychosis? If it doesn't resolve and it's only getting worse, then you have to find the right village of treatment providers to help you through it. Otherwise, you could end up in the criminal justice system. Now, what's interesting, when you look at postpartum psychosis, most of the cases don't involve murders.
Yeah.
Right?
This is the first one I've heard of.
Yeah. I mean, you can commit crimes, maybe get abusive, not condoning it, but maybe beat the child, slap the child, even an infant. It's criminal, of course, but you can still lack criminal responsibility. The actual ending of lives during that psychotic episode is extraordinarily rare. It's extraordinarily rare. And I cannot wait to hear the statistics when these doctors take the stand. It's going to be very enlightening. It is.
That's what we need to see, because so often I feel like, you know, we can Google it. We can do this or that. But this is their profession. Mm-hmm. Or they should really know the correct, you know, the ones that were done correctly, the studies that they really think are good, and what the true numbers are. I'm very interested because I'm a huge stat person. I love those. So at the end of the day, Philip, and I've kept you so long here, I just looked up. I'm like, oh my gosh. What do you think's going to happen? What do you think's going to happen to Lindsay?
I actually think that this is going to be a hung jury. I do. I think that doctors from both sides are going to be compelling. And I think you're going to have some jurors who are going to side with Lindsay. Some are going to side with the Commonwealth. You might have a few who just throw their hands up in the air and say, I don't know who to believe, which technically is reasonable doubt. If you don't know who to believe, it means the state hasn't proven it to you. And she should be found to lack criminal responsibility. If it deadlocks, depending on the split, the numerical split, I don't believe there would be a retrial. I think what would happen is Mr. Reddington would engage in plea discussions with the Commonwealth, and she would probably plead guilty, and they would stipulate that she lacked criminal responsibility and send her to Bridgewater, the state hospital, by stipulation. It's part of the plea agreement. It's kind of like in California, you plead guilty to the murder, but the prosecution stipulates that the client was not guilty by reason of insanity. It's all part of the agreement. You don't go to prison. Instead, you go off to the state hospital, and that the case is over. One of the advantages, by the way, and I believe this is the law in Massachusetts, is that if you are found NGI, not guilty by reason of insanity, you're not legally convicted. Even though you're confined, the law treats you as what's called an acquittee, meaning you're acquitted, but you don't go home. It just means you're still sort of a commodity or chattel of the state, where they have to take care of you until you are restored to sanity. And I think that that would be a fair outcome in this case. Let her plead, but find no criminal responsibility. And off she goes to the hospital until her clinicians deem her safe to be returned to the community. I think that would be a fair result.
All right. You know I'm going to disagree on that one, right? I mean,
of course.
It no spells no.
You want her a hug from the raptors or sent away for life. I get it.
No. Listen, I have a lot of empathy for this because I've seen it. It's horrible. I don't understand it, but I've seen it. And I've watched people that are wonderful humans want to cause their, you know, hate their children. Just want these babies any place but around them. So I've seen it. I know that this is another level, but this is the thing. No one is their voice. Mm-hmm. Cora, Dawson, Cullen, who is their voice? They deserve justice for being strangled to death. And I believe she was knew right from wrong at the time it happened. I want her to get help. This reminds me so much of Andrea Yates in Houston. She drowned five of her children. Do you realize Andrea Yates to this day, and that happened, geez, decades ago.
Oh, yeah.
She is still, so she was convicted, by the way. They reversed it because of an error. As you said, what the agreement was is they did not retry. They committed her to a mental institution.
As part of the plea agreement.
As part of the agreement. And today she is still in that mental institution. And this is what's interesting, though. Every year she has been allowed the chance to prove she is now mentally
restored. Yeah.
And every year, including this year, because I looked it up right before the show, she has turned it down. Mm-hmm. She doesn't, in other words, I also read that she would pass, you know, from, you know, people who have taken care of her in this situation, she'd probably pass it. But she doesn't want out. She says she needs to continue. She's opted out of being able to be tested to get out because she feels like she continue. I guess when you have that big of a break, you know, maybe there's no going back. Like you're always going to be dangerous or something. So she's basically self-committing herself, right? Well, she doesn't want out.
It could also be that she's fearful she will not have the resources to take care of herself. Remember, the husband has moved on. The kids are gone. I don't know if she would be the last man standing in the family, if there's anybody around to take care of her, but she could really literally end up on welfare, subsidized housing, and it might not be the greatest life. And frankly, who would hire her? Would you hire her knowing that she's killed five children? So she's basically an unemployable felon, frankly, unless that was in Texas, wasn't it?
Yes, Houston. Yeah.
Unless under Texas law, she's deemed to be an acquittee. If she's an acquittee, then she's not legally convicted by virtue of the hospital commitment. So there, you know, she may be employable is my point, but she might not feel that she's able to perform in the workplace anymore because of her history and her lack of resources. So it could just be that she's not ready to re-enter society in a normal fashion. It's sad. It is sad. It sounds like she really has nobody rallying in support of her.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is rallying, although if you remember, these husbands supported Yates's husband, I think his name was Rusty, supported her. But I mean, that was even a worse situation than this. They were living in a bus. He was just absolutely, it was in that situation, really, to me, should have been held responsible. This wasn't exactly this. Really quickly, I have one last question. What do you think about all of this money that Mr. Patrick is making off the deaths of his children? It's a little galling for me. You can hear me coming down a little bit hard on him. And I just think he's has some culpability in this for sure.
Are you talking about through the litigation? Should he prevail at trial on the civil case?
Well, no, I'm saying, and I didn't know this, but one of our sleuths and our mod did some research and he received $1 million in GoFundMe and has a civil suit, as we know, that he's filed trying to get millions.
Well, to be fair, a couple of things here. Remember, he lost three children here. If he feels he has a strong enough case to show that the treatment providers of his wife, who mothered his children, were negligent in their standard of care, why shouldn't he be compensated for the loss of their lives? I don't have a problem with that.
Philip, he should be paying. He should be compensated for his standard of care. His standard of care was absolute bad.
No, I understand that, but would this have happened anyway had she have had the right treatment providers? Let's assume she really did have the right doctors. They were able to definitively diagnose her, gave her the right treatment protocol. They had her on that right, what I call that polypharmacy of medication, but she just chose not to take the drugs. For whatever reason, it gave her brain fog, made her gain weight, made her feel bloated. She didn't like the aftertaste in her mouth, so she just stopped taking it. And before you know it, she's only on a few of the drugs. Now she's spiraling. Sometimes they say in psychiatry, circling the drain, if you will, crashing, and kills three children. Well, then is it really the treatment provider's fault at that point? They did everything right. If she didn't want to be compliant in her drug protocol and medication protocol, I don't think you should blame the treatment providers. That's me. I really don't. Look, when somebody dies and somebody is not treated properly, we always look to blame somebody, either criminally or civilly. We want to be made whole. But there are certain situations where you're just not entitled to it. There's not always a civil or a criminal remedy for every wrong out there. There just isn't. And I think this is the one case where, I don't know, I unless and until I hear from the experts, I want to hear what the surefire red flags were that everybody should have known that she had postpartum psychosis. All the triggers, all the red flags, all the signals, and they just missed it, blew it, or they were not trained in it to detect it. If that's the case, then it's really not his fault or the kid's fault, and certainly not Lindsay's. Remember, we go to the doctor, we're at their mercy. We trust their judgment, their training, their skill, their experience, their treatment history of other people, their employability, their licensure, to trust that we're going to get good care. And then what happens? You don't. And somebody dies. And now it embroils the criminal justice system. I don't have a problem with him being financially made whole again in this case. I don't. It's not to say that I think it was foolhardy of him to testify without immunity or invoking the Fifth. That's another question. But he lost his three kids, and it's a tragedy.
Yeah, well, we might have to agree to disagree on this one, Philip, because I want him held responsible. All right.
A lot of people do. A lot do. Yeah.
So you know what, Philip? I love having you on the show. Oftentimes we agree. Sometimes we half agree, half don't. This one, we're not necessarily agreeing. We're having a great discussion. Absolutely. And I could have asked about 8 other people on the show or more that agreed with me and have them come on, and I could just be talking back and forth with them and going, yeah, see, we're right. But I don't like that. I think, you know, this is one of these cases where I think we all recognize it's complicated. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factors. I mean, the fact that she jumped out of a window and is forever paralyzed, that's a fact. I'm with you, though. We need to wait and listen to the last doctor. But I just can't thank you enough for coming on here. I always enjoy, in front of the camera and behind the camera, our discussions. And so thank you for coming on and
my pleasure. And
sharing
one last thought. If any of your viewers or your mods are in medical school, I urge them all to do a specialized residency in psychiatry involving PPP. You can make it your niche and make millions, especially at the state and government hospital level. Because trust me when I tell you, they will use your services. It is slim pickings out there to find people who can treat, let alone diagnose, this condition. But I encourage you all to look into that field. It would be fascinating and a great living.
What a great piece of advice. What about you? Maybe go second career.
Second career? Are you kidding? Lindsay doesn't have a pot or a window. Who's going to pay me? Okay. I don't want tired of pro bono work. I did God's work as a public defender all these years. I want to make some damn money for a change. Okay.
You did. You're so funny.
I'm kidding.
Oh, Philip, yeah. Thank you so much. I always enjoy you. And to everybody, all the mods, you've been amazing. The chat, I really enjoyed. You know, I love it when Philip's on too, because he, you know, you're just so educated and so interesting. And, you know, a lot of times when we're on Court TV / Law and Crime, some of these others, no matter what you're on, you literally, it's like 30 seconds. Yeah. And you've got 30 minutes of information to impart. And yeah. I love this setting because you impart that information. And it's when I'm on here by myself, I'm trying to look at chat a little bit. So this is great. I just good. Love this. So thank you for imparting your wisdom on us and for your last thoughts. I appreciate you.
Well, it was an absolute pleasure joining you. I wish you and all your viewers a great weekend. Stay healthy out there. And healthy and wise.
All right. Thank you, Philip.
All right. Be well. Good night.
All right. Good night. You guys, isn't Philip great? I just love having him on. I'm not just blowing smoke. Obviously, I don't have anybody on the show that I don't completely and entirely respect and think are really value added in different areas. What we have coming up, I'm really looking forward to having that expert on. There's now three in the pipeline. It's just on me, and I need to get my schedule worked out with them next week because I really do want to hone in on those, the ransom notes. The first two, really, I call one a ransom and one's an apology note, and get some feedback on that, whether AI is infused, whether it's not, what they mean. So three language specialists that our team is working on. One of our new team members, John, has done an incredible job working on that. And so I really appreciate that. Everyone, I wanted to remind you all that we're back getting these shorts on. We're trying to do three a day that are just shorts, you know, under 3 minutes. Most of them are around a minute or so that just impart some information about ongoing cases that we're looking at. Obviously, our main cases are Nancy Guthrie. We've also followed really closely the Nolan Wells case. And then, obviously, I'm going to talk on and off again about this ridiculous effort for my favorite, Brian Koberger, who is trying to get a retrial. I think it's going to fail miserably. And I just got to tell you, I just almost really can't stand covering that because it's giving him exactly what he wants. And, you know, he's been out of the spotlight for a year and he's so excited about jumping back in with this news that we all anticipated and expected. I need to look back, but I think it was the day after he pled. I said, he's going to use Garza and come forth and try to fight it and try to get a new trial, dumping his lawyer, Ann Taylor, in the grease. I just think she was too competent and it's not going to work. I think the judge was too good at making sure all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed. And I think he is going to spend the rest of his life in prison and not get a chance, another bite at the apple. So, but it doesn't mean we won't continue to hear from him. He's a freak and he's a Bundy and he's going to keep wanting to be in the spotlight. So certainly expect that, but I really don't expect this to go through. If it goes through, you can knock me over with a feather. I'll literally stand up here and have my daughter put a feather, and I'll just fall over and topple over because I just don't think it'll happen. But everyone, again, I appreciate you. And I'm glad we covered this case. And until next time, everyone, may justice be served. I'll see you tomorrow for sure.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.